Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Skyla Jeremias. At Asembia 2023 in Las Vegas, Nevada, Tasmina Hyderi, Associate Director of Digital Solutions at AmerisourceBergen, presented on the future of the biosimilars industry, as well as how payers have responded to the influx of new biosimilar products in the United States. During the session, she shared results from AmerisourceBergen's report on the biosimilars pipeline, sharing survey results on how payers place biosimilars on formularies, their views on interchangeability, and their use of prior authorization and step therapy strategies to encourage providers to prescribe preferred products. On today's episode, we spoke with Tasmina and her colleague, as well as a returning guest on the Not So Different podcast, Brian Bean, Senior Director of Biosimilar Commercialization at AmerisourceBergen, about some of the points brought up during the presentation and some of the pricing trends that we're seeing in the space. Welcome to the show. To start us off, can you both just introduce yourselves for the audience and tell them a bit about your work with AmerisourceBergen?
Thanks, Skylar. Thanks for having us today. My name is Tasmina Hyderi. I'm an Associate Director of Digital Solutions. I lead our payer engagement team with Formulary Decisions. And for those who are not familiar with Formulary Decisions, it is a digital platform with clinical and economic information on over 3,000 pipeline and FDA-approved products, including biosimilars. And within our team, I also lead various research efforts in key areas such as biosimilars, pre-approval information exchange, and value frameworks.
Hi, everybody. My name is Brian Bean. I'm the Senior Director of Biosimilar Commercialization with AmerisourceBergen. I sit on our strategic global sourcing team, where our main role is distribution contracting with our manufacturer partners. We ensure we have access to products, specifically biosimilars, so that our downstream customers can have access and have choice amongst these cost-effective products. So thanks again for having us today, Skylar.
Now, how have payer perceptions around biosimilars changed, and are we seeing a greater willingness for payers to include biosimilars on formularies?
Yeah, so it's really hard to believe, but we're approaching that decade mark to the first biosimilars first being on the market. Uptake was slow at first. I remember when Zarxio was first approved and entered the market in 2015, doing this manual search on formulary placement. And for many of the health plans, there was actually no information, no coverage details for Zarxio. But I will say that comfort level and uptake, it's increased over time. And in recent market research of AmerisourceBergen's Managed Care Network payer panel of pharmacy directors and medical directors, we saw that 75% of organizations have policies in place that greatly or very much encourage the use of biosimilars, with 20% actually somewhat encouraging use and only 5% not encouraging use very much or at all. So in more and more cases, we're seeing the use of biosimilars is actually preferred over reference products, usually with contracts in place for select biosimilars.
We're seeing a trend among payers to cover some, but not all, biosimilars for a particular reference product. How might this strategy influence the competitive aspects of the biosimilars market and adoption trends?
We asked this question as well to AmerisourceBergen's payer panel, and they responded when one or more biosimilars are available for a reference product, the organization will likely pick multiple biosimilars or even just one. So pricing and contracting, those are some of those top factors that are driving the preferred product decision. So it's not surprising that payers won't pick all of the biosimilars as preferred and will only pick some or just one as preferred. So this certainly keeps that marketplace competitive. It also gives multiple manufacturers potentially a chance to capture a piece of the market share.
Several reports, including the one I mentioned before, have noted that payers are listing interchangeability as a main factor influencing their decisions on whether to cover a biosimilar. What value are payers seeing in the interchangeability designation, and how does their view compare to providers?
During the presentation, we might have not discussed this specifically, but we believe that interchangeability can really help drive the use of biosimilars at the point of sale and potentially minimize any barriers to access ultimately for the patient. So when cost savings are on the line and the biosimilar has an interchangeability designation, it's essentially one less step to get the product to the patient. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that the biosimilar substitution laws might vary by state, with certain states having some more flexibility than others on communicating to the prescriber, let's say, when a switch was made from the reference product to the biosimilar. Now, for payers and healthcare decision makers, formulary decisions does provide free access to a tool that kind of goes over these different state substitution laws. And it is an interactive tool that is available at no cost to healthcare decision makers. Now, when we're talking about patient or provider side, we haven't actually conducted this research, but it'll be interesting to see if interchangeability has a role in prescriber comfort with using biosimilars, in particular those that are interchangeable, and if patients would feel more comfortable with using an interchangeable biosimilar in place of a reference product.
We're also seeing more calls for the FDA to clarify interchangeability guidelines and possibly even get rid of the designation entirely, especially after the EU and the UK declared all biosimilars as interchangeable. It may be a loaded question, but is there a good reason, in your opinion, to keep the interchangeability designation at this time?
Yes, definitely a loaded question. I will say the interchangeability designation, it has become more prominent within the U.S. marketplace as the biosimilars move into the pharmacy benefit space. I would say that manufacturers didn't really prioritize the designation in the past, since the majority of approved biosimilars in the past or in the medical benefit or physician-administered space, like our infliximab products, for example. Now, given that we've seen switch studies, even for non-interchangeable biosimilars, really showing that it's safe and effective to switch between a biosimilar and the reference product, it's almost like the scientific community has the evidence they need to transition patients back and forth between biosimilars and the reference product, regardless of that interchangeability designation. Now, thinking about that additional expense for those clinical trials in order to achieve that interchangeability designation, we're really not seeing the ROI there. And in fact, we think it can even add a layer of confusion for patients and prescribers. Like, what's really the difference between a non-interchangeable biosimilar and an interchangeable biosimilar?
Yeah, I totally agree with what Tasmina said. I think this is definitely a loaded question. And I work with our manufacturer partners. And the last piece that Tasmina mentioned about the ROI here is probably the most interesting part. I think they're already being challenged here of trying to find ways to cut their development costs and making sure that biosimilars are sustainable and profitable for them. Adding this interchangeability designation and potentially additional studies to their plate here at the beginning and costing them more to produce these biosimilars is a hurdle for them within the U.S. And it's, like you mentioned, not something that they're seeing in different markets. So I do think that it is creating another barrier. It's hopefully something that we can clear up in the future. I know the FDA is looking into different things with interchangeability, but right now it's just something that is kind of creating a barrier to adoption and something that we need to take on as stakeholders within the industry to make sure everyone's educated on what interchangeability is and how it can be implemented.
Earlier this year, the United States experienced the first launch for an adalimumab biosimilar, Amgen's Amjevita. The biosimilar was launched with a dual pricing structure at 5% and 55% lower than Humira, the reference product. Why do you think Amgen chose this strategy, and do you think more manufacturers will price their products similarly going forward?
So Amgen came out and said that they launched with this dual WAC strategy, in their words, to provide flexible pricing approach to ensure patient access. I do feel that they launched with two WACs so that they could get on PBM formularies. It can be argued that PBMs do favor higher priced items, obviously to get the rebates. So I do anticipate that other manufacturers, specifically in the Humira space and in the pharmacy benefit biosimilars that are coming up, to potentially follow suit here and have this low and high WAC strategy. The strategy, I think, is causing some confusion for customers as they're asking, why would the same product be priced at two different price points? So I think that is a barrier that we all need to help customers and providers understand. But I think it also shows the promise of cost savings here. So the 55% lower item that Amgen launched, don't know if that really falls in line of what they could produce this at and sell it at, but it does show that there is the promise of cost savings here And hopefully, if all parties can align, we can achieve those cost savings throughout all of the healthcare industry.
What are some other strategies that you think manufacturers will apply to try and convince payers and pharmacy benefit managers to add their biosimilar products to formularies?
Like I said, I do think a lot of this comes down to price. So either if that's a rebate to the PBM or if it's through a lower cost item that they're preferring, I think a lot of it will be looking at price. But there are other factors that they need to consider. And I do think payers and PBMs are considering. The biggest thing here, I think, is ensuring supply. AbbVie has done a great job throughout Humira's tenure of ensuring that there is supply for the world's largest drug. These biosimilar manufacturers need to show that they can have that same supply level. There has been a few instances, although rare, within the biosimilar space where a manufacturer has had supply issues with other biosimilars. So I think that's going to be top of mind for a PBM to put a certain product on their formulary. They need to be ensured that there will be sufficient supply. Other factors here, I think, are the wraparound services for the product, such as patient support, reimbursement assistance, copay assistance. Again, I think the specific market of Humira, AbbVie has done a great job with that and has a world-class wraparound services for patients. So keeping in mind that if a PBM would put a different product on formulary, providers do need to feel comfortable prescribing that and do need to feel comfortable that their patients are getting support and they are also getting the reimbursement assistance and any other assistance that they need to switch over to these products.
Now, the report also noted that prior authorization and step edits were the most common payer tactics used to encourage the use of preferred products. However, these tactics have often resulted in restricted access to biosimilars. What should payers be keeping in mind when implementing these policies and how they will overall impact patient access to preferred biosimilars?
Yeah, one thing to keep in mind is, you know, these products being injectable biologics, they probably would have had prior authorization or step edits anyways, given treatment guidelines and availability of less costly alternatives like our oral DMARDs. They also have specific dosing recommendations and potentially require prescriber oversight that is from a specialist. So when we look at adalimumab for rheumatoid arthritis, well, it's very likely that methotrexate would be a required trial and dosing would need to be in line with FDA approved indication and the prescriber being a rheumatologist. Now, using the preferred product, whether it be a biosimilar or the reference product, this would be an additional step on top of that or a part of the prior authorization criteria. Now, one thing to keep in mind from the health plan perspective, while prescribers are still a huge component of that uptake and adoption piece, so providing any guidance in advance or a heads up on what the preferred product is, as well as any timing for changes in the formulary, that's imperative for not disrupting patient care. So certainly communicating with patients and prescribers, that's a step that healthcare organizations can take. Anything that can be done also operationally behind the scenes can also minimize that disruption piece. So if the non-preferred product already has a prior authorization in place, can they finish out that treatment? Or can they transition to the preferred product without having a brand new prior authorization? And then the other question is whether strategies outside of your typical utilization management can be implemented using any data, so diagnosis codes or quantity limits at the point of sale. And this can really streamline access and be integrated potentially even into that contracting strategy with manufacturers by health plans. So all these stakeholders really need to work together cohesively. That's integral here to make biosimilars utilization and preferred biosimilar or reference product use streamlined.
Some of the major players in the insulin space, such as Lilly and Novo Nordisk, have announced that they will lower the out-of-pocket costs for their insulin products, including insulin biosimilars. What was your reaction to these announcements, and do you think this strategy will actively impact patients' ability to afford their insulins?
Yeah, my reaction is that this is great news for patients. I think it really shows that biosimilars can drive savings and it can reach patients. Multiple manufacturers in the space have already come out and said that they're extending their $35 cap to patients that have or do not have commercial insurance. And I think we've all seen different studies showing that biosimilars have saved billions of dollars since they've been introduced in 2015 in the US. But there's always been this question of do those savings actually reach patients? And I think this is an example of where it can and it has. I think the next step, though, for making sure that patients do realize these savings is for all of us as stakeholders in the industry to align on educating pharmacists on these potential savings and potential products that are out there. The insulin market has the interchangeability designation with a few of the biosimilar products that have been launched. So making sure that the pharmacists that are handling these know that these products can be interchanged, understanding the different payer landscapes and understanding the different pricing programs that are out there from these manufacturers. So like I said, so that patients can really realize these benefits.
What can new players like Celltrion and Amneal Pharmaceuticals learn from past success stories, especially as it relates to driving product uptake?
We've seen in the past that most of the success in the biosimilar marketplace has come from the first to market entrants. They control most of the share in most instances, but that doesn't say that these late entrants can't get market share on their own. Biosimilars at their core are the same safety and efficacy as one another. So what we preach to our manufacturer partners is that they need to make sure that their wraparound services outside of the actual product are at least on par or even greater than the innovator companies or the biosimilar competitors. So they need to prioritize the patient through those wraparound services, like I mentioned before. That's patient support, copay, or reimbursement assistance. All those wraparound services need to be there. I think the manufacturers need to keep in mind that providers aren't only driven by the cost of the product. There is another cost to switch within their businesses to make that switch and efficiently do that switch. So they need to factor in those costs, and they want to make sure that if they're making that switch, that it's efficient and it's transparent, not only for them, but for their patients, and that they have the support. So AmerisourceBergen is more than equipped to partner with our manufacturers in developing and implementing any of these such programs. Our team also actively monitors the biosimilar pipeline for any approvals or any launches. So we do offer a complimentary access to our biosimilars landscape report, which is available online at AmerisourceBergen.com.
And lastly, do you have any concluding thoughts?
Yeah, I can take that first. Thanks, Skylar. So I will say, and maybe I am biased, but biosimilars continue to be really a fascinating area, both from that pipeline perspective, also thinking about changes in uptake and adoption, and also with the different things happening in legislation. So with all of this movement that we're seeing, AmerisourceBergen will continue our payer trends research. We'll also continue research among other stakeholders. We're really hoping to be that partner for manufacturers in order to help them commercialize their biosimilars all the way from preclinical phases all the way through to product maturity. So really we can help them, you know, develop those market access and distribution strategies. And on top of that, formulary decisions can be used as a vehicle by manufacturers to help communicate clinical and economic information with healthcare decision makers from different payer organizations like health plans and PBMs, as well as hospitals, health systems, and IDNs.
And I would just add, on top of what Tasmina mentioned, AmerisourceBergen can help manufacturers set up those patient assistance programs or those field reimbursement teams. We really do sit next to manufacturers as partners, no matter if it's the first biosimilar that you're launching or if it's your fourth or fifth one that you're trying to launch. AmerisourceBergen is committed to uniting stakeholders across the supply chain to support the biosimilar channel and expand access to these medicines. And thank you very much, Skylar, for having us today.
Thank you, Tasmina and Brian, for sharing your insights with us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information on everything we discussed today in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.